Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sanitarian Congregation, Long Island, the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is May 5, 2014, or it is this 7, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, There Shall Be Showers of Blessing. There shall be showers of blessing. This is the promise of love. There shall be seasons refreshing, sent from the Savior above. Showers of blessing, showers of blessing we need. Mercy drops round us are falling, but for the showers we plead. There shall be showers of blessing, precious reviving again. Over the hills and the valley, sun of abundance aflame. Showers of blessing, showers of blessing we need. Mercy drops round the earth falling, but for the showers we plead. There shall be showers of blessing, send them upon us, O Yah. Grant to us now a refreshing, come and now haunt the world. Showers of blessing, showers of blessing we need. Mercy drops round us are falling, but for the showers we plead. There shall be showers of blessing, oh, today at the night fall. Now as to Yah we're confessing, now as on Yahshua we call. Showers of blessing, showers of blessing we need. Mercy drops round us are falling, but for the showers we plead. They study in typology, 12th symbolic code number 5. We're going to, that's by the V.T. Hardoff. Wrote that in about, I don't have a date here. It looked like, his wife reprinted that in 1957 or something. This was a sermon in 1944, July the 15th, that V.T. Hardoff had. And he's taking his study from Isaiah 41, chapter 41, started at verse 21 to 23. We've had this before just recently, but my attention has been drawn to it again. We got some new things we want to develop about this subject. It's about the three main sons of Seth and Isaac and Jacob. I represent Jacob today. I represented Jacob in the allegory when the antiquity Esau and Jacob were born in 1970 in the message at Gilead Center. And so we are going to learn something new that we need to know about how Yahweh is going to bring about and set up this antitypical kingdom that he's in the process of doing now with us. And we'll certainly find our answers in the study of the typology if we will follow closely. So we'll start reading now Isaiah 41, 21 and 23. It says, produce your cause, as saith Yahweh. Bring forth your strong reasons, saith the king of Jacob. Now keep in mind that we're Jacobites. So Africa. You are a son of Jacob, as all of the 12 tribes that are scattered in all nations. Yahweh is coming together, the sons of Jacob. Okay. Says, let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare things for to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together. Elohim is challenging the world not only to predict the future, but to explain also what bearing the past has on the future, that they may show that they are deities. I'd rather use the word deities than gods, but I don't mind using that pagan terminology for the Baals, for the false gods, all right enough. Okay. That's what the translators called it. But those Greek translators weren't happy with that. They wanted to give those pagan god name titles, actually pagan titles, to Yahweh and his son Yahshua, and so forth. Okay, it says, for the challenge implies itself implies that none but the Elohim knows the latter end of the former thing. Now let us read Isaiah 41:4. Who hath wrought and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Yahweh, the first, and with the last, I am He. Elohim here propounds the question as to who had foreseen and declared the generations that were to come from the very beginning, even unto the very end of the time. Then he answers his own question. I, the Yahweh, am He. For this scripture plainly shows that the Yahweh has declared the generations of today from the beginning of the time, and that the former things are significant in that they point forward or otherwise related to the present or future events or conditions. With the help of this chart, I believe we shall be able to see a little of the Elohim's work, particularly in respect unto how he has gathered how he has pictured the generation of the day and the generations of yesterday. Let us turn now to Genesis 3:15. And I will put enmity between thee and thy seed. No, between thee and the woman. Okay, who is this thee? This thee is Satan. And thy seed and her seed. Between thy seed and her seed. Let's read that again. And I will put enmity between thee, Satan, and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. So now that enmity is personified in Yahweh's true congregation today, his true church, as we call it, with co-mingled with the wheat and the tares. There is the seed of Satan and the seed of the woman. And that has always been until the 12th hour, when the house of David is made up. Everlasting kingdom of heaven is made up with antithetical David in charge of it. And then that is when the two seeds are finally separated forever. And when that 144,000 comes forth, that will be a sign that the seed of Satan has been forever purged out of the woman. Woman representing the pure church from Adam clear on down to the end of time. And that pure church is represented, being represented by Seth, the third born son of Adam and Eve, after Cain and Abel were off the scene. Then Seth is first born, and this is where the true pure woman began. Okay, and now that pure woman appears again today, with a crown and 12 stars upon her crown, And that is showing that antithetical house of Jacob is back now and setting up the everlasting kingdom of heaven. We cannot possibly misunderstand what a woman Elohim meant in this scripture, but there was only one woman, Eve. Then in the earth, in the presence of Adam and Eve and the serpent, Elohim spoke these words predicting the future outcome of the Eve seed and the serpent. For the Eve's children were to have their heel bruised by the serpent and devil and the devil. And in return, the children of the Eve, the human family, were to bruise the devil's head, the serpent's head. Now you know that even if one's leg were to be amputated, one can live on. But when one is decapitated, his life immediately ends. Elohim predicted here that there was to be enmity between good and evil all through time. Okay. We experienced that enmity in the third feeding pastor Gilead Center for 33 years, 1970-2003. We experienced it every day. And we know that Mount Carmel experienced it every day from 1930 to 1970 for her duration. We know that Mount Basin, the first feeding pastor for the Adventists from 1844 to 1890, and I'm going to say actually that to 1930. So let's just say each feeding pastor had a 40-year period, and they had enmity. Good and evil always personified in their pastures. Okay? And though the serpent would wound the human family, yet the descendants of Adam, and Eve were finally to bruise Satan's head. But you may say, Yahshua has to do that. Okay. I do not wish to dispute your word, but actually it is Yahshua through the human family that is to accomplish it. For in Jeremiah 51:20, Elohim himself declares that Israel is to be his battle axe, his weapon of war. For with Israel will he break in pieces the nation. Okay. Though it is to be accomplished by the will and direction of the Yahshua. Okay, so it's Yahshua that's in charge then of this here great army of heaven. We'll do it through his people. In this way, his people who have been wounded by the Satan will finally bruise Satan's head. So now do you see why the house of David now is being made up? And to engage the house of Satan, which is run by Obama. You see why the antitypical David will have to physically engage the incarnate Satan that's incarnated in the human flesh with Obama. Okay, well, Barack Obama in the Hebrew, the definition is Satan. There's the name of Satan. For the representing of the period of the church history, symbolized by the Eve, we have assigned unto her the first of the three sections on the chart. Next in the line of the typology, we have Hagar and Ishmael and Sarah and Isaac. They too are types of the church, as you already know, from the fourth chapter of Galatians. In this chapter, Paul makes it plain that Hagar was a type of the Old Testament church, the Jewish church, and that Sarah was a type of the New Testament church, the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene creed, with the apostles assigned as the leaders of that congregation. Okay, so now it says with the first period symbolized by the Eve herself, the second symbolized by the Hagar, and the third symbolized by the Sarah. We see that the church history is divided into three periods. In the first period, Eve's period, there was no particular line save that of the Cain and Abel, through which the seed of the woman was at last to bruise Satan's head. Mm-hmm. And since Cain, being evil, could not become that line of the seed, and since Abel was now dead, someone else would need to carry on the line of the righteous seed. Let us read Genesis 4:25. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son, and called his name Seth. For Elohim said, she hath appointed me another seed. For Elohim said, she, said Eve, hath appointed unto me another seed instead of the Abel whom Cain slew. Yahweh appointed Seth to stand in the Abel stead, and through the line of the Seth was Elohim to carry on his purpose for the human race. Proceeding on until the next period, we come to Hagar and Ishmael. Providence, you recall, brought Hagar and Ishmael into the home of Abraham. You well know the circumstances which brought it about. Elohim had promised his son unto Sarah, but years passed without the promise being fulfilled unto her, and she grew impatient over the long delay. In order to pacify Sarah, Elohim permitted that Hagar become Abraham's wife, and Ishmael was born unto them. You can see that this arrangement was not a necessary part of the Elohim plan. In fact, it was Sarah's plan, whereby she could at least vicariously have a son, if she were not to have one of her own. According to Paul in Galatians 4, Hagar typified the Jewish church and Ishmael her children. Through it all, we see that it was Elohim's plan from the beginning to have only the church born of the Spirit, the Christian church. But as in the case of Hagar and the birth of Ishmael, the Jewish congregation, which was born of the flesh only and not of the Spirit, came into the being. Through the experience of Hagar and Ishmael, Providence, you see, wrote both history and prophecy, for it foreshadowed the coming of the Jewish church. After Isaac was born, trouble came into the home of Abraham. And Elohim instructed him to put away Hagar and her son, for her son was not to be heir with Ishmael. But why did Elohim direct Abraham to do this? If it was not an allegory, I do not believe that Elohim did it because he wanted to be mean unto Ishmael. I believe that he did it because he was writing both history and also prophecy in this experience. If it is an allegory, then what is its meaning? It means that when the Jewish people, the children of the Jewish church, fail to be converted and reconciled unto Elohim, fail to be born again and become the children of Sarah. All right, let's bring this up to our time. Gilead Center, 1970 to 2003, they had every reason to be born again. For they had the sanctuary restored unto them, teaching them how to be born of the water and the Spirit, as Yahshua taught Nicodemus. Now, you see, Yahweh couldn't teach Nicodemus how to be born again until after he had raised up the apostolic congregation of the disciples and put the sanctuary back into true operation with the apostles. Then people could come and inquire how to be saved. And then Yahshua says you got to be born again of the water and the blood and the spirit. And so now, this is what was being revived at Kermit, Texas, was this water, the blood, and the spirit in a new and living way, Hebrews 10:20. For in the allegory, Yahshua was born as the Isaac branch in 1970, as well as Jacob was born, his spiritual twin brother at that time. And then also Isaac was born. Now keep in mind, this being an allegory, it don't have to match the years that the type set up. The allegory is just meant to show that you can have these events dovetailing in a message at a certain time together. And so in 1970, Isaac prefigured Yahshua, the coming great Messiah, the sacrifice that was to redeem all mankind with his blood. And then he had a name, Branch, Message. Isaac, Branch, with another name for Yahshua. Now I'm going to tell you something else, folks. Joshua, J-O-H-S-H-U-A, was a transliteration into the English from the old Hebrew translation, the original Hebrew translation. And the original Hebrew translation was Yahshua. Y-H-S-H-U-A. And so, that was Joshua's name that was with Moses. They gave him the name of Yahshua. Yahshua is just another name for, Joshua is just an English transliteration of the name of Yahshua. Okay, now, what is going on here? We have a man named Joshua in the English language that had the original name Yahshua, and he was with Moses in the wilderness for 40 years, and he was anointed and ordained to succeed to Moses in the continuing the journey of taking the children of Israel out of the wilderness and into the promised land. A man by the name of Yahshua. Okay, now keep that in mind. He was a type. Joshua, as we know him today, was a type because he had Yahshua's name. He was a literal man born of the human family here on earth with the name of Yahshua back in the Old Testament. Now, he was a type of Yahshua that was to come and be born at the cross. Okay. He's a type of Yahshua that was born in 1970 at Gilead Center. That's when Robert Rhoda Johnson says, I am the antitypical Joshua, the son of Nun, the one that succeeded Moses, V.T. Hollis, in the antitype. Well, all of you, Rhoda Johnson was saying that I have Yahshua's name, Joshua. In the Hebrew, my name is Yahshua. See? Now, if Rose Johnson had advanced inspiration, he would have said that. He would have said, told everybody, well, I have the antitypical name of Yahshua in the Hebrew. Okay. And indeed, I remember Rose Johnson talking about Joshua was another name for Yahshua. Okay. So, but he didn't connect it up to connect to him as being this antitypical Yahshua, also in the flesh. So, because it was an allegory. So all this was saying is that Yahshua was born in 1970. Antitypical Isaac was born. Antitypical Esau and Jacob were born. Okay. Now, Jacob gets the name change when he overcomes to take charge of the purified kingdom in the 12th hour. He gets the name change to Israel. And only the overcomer that becomes perfect can get to adopt that name, Israel, because he's a true Israelite indeed. Now, so what are we looking at? We're looking at a man named Joshua, in the Hebrew is named Yahshua, a type of Yahshua, the one that comes from heaven. I've always said that Yahshua can't be his own type. He has to have somebody be a type of him, and there's nobody can play the role of the type of Yahshua, but I was wrong. Yes, they can. They can have Yahshua's name, and they can do the work of Yahshua. Now, what did Joshua do? Now, here's something else. In the New Testament, they had a temple. They had a sanctuary of a sort of a temple there at Jerusalem, and the Pharisees were in charge of. But when the disciples took on, the leadership after the cross, Yahshua before the cross, so he went up to Samaria one day and took the disciples with him, and he met this Samaritan woman and was a Gentile, said, "You worship, you know not what we know, what we worship is salvation of the Jews." Says, "The time will come when you no longer worship in this mountain, nor at Jerusalem, but you'll worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth." What is Yahshua saying to her? That wherever the Father chooses to place his name, anywhere in the world, here in the New Testament time, that's where you worship him in spirit and truth, because it's the heavenly sanctuary that is in the true heavenly sanctuary that's in operation in heaven. And so wherever he chooses to place his name, that's where you meet, and you meet with him in heaven. And you confess your sins and whatever you have to do according to the sanctuary service here on earth, and it will be received by Yahshua, the high priest in heaven, and they will do the sanctuary work in heaven as far as the building and going through the motions of the high priest, just like they did here on earth. Moses set up the tabernacle, and the high priest was a symbol and a type of Yahshua here on earth, showing his work in the heaven. They would go through all the motions, literally go through them and carry them out day by day, year by year. Yahshua did the same thing in heaven. He carries out the priesthood and the work in the heavenly sanctuary day by day, year by year in heaven, according to the law laws of Moses, the way they were set up here on earth. All right, let's go on with our reading now. We're in this typology, studying typology. We're on page 9. It says that if it is an allegory, then what is its meaning? It means that when the Jewish people, the children of the Jewish church, fail to be converted and reconciled unto Elohim, fail to be born again, and become the children of Sarah, and that's what happened at Gilead Center. They fail to be born again to become the children of Sarah, so they remain the children of Hagar and Ishmael of the Old Covenant, of the Old Testament. So if they refuse to become born again, become the children of Sarah by the Spirit, see, they got to be born by the Spirit, just like Yahshua was born by the Spirit under Mary here on earth, but he came through the fleshly lineage of mankind here on earth, the sinful lineage of the carnal man by the will and the power of the Elohim. So he said, they refused to be born again by the Spirit, by the will of the power of the Elohim, which the miraculous birth of the Isaac typified. When they failed to do this, they met with the sad experience, which was typified by Ishmael and Hagar's being sent away from Abraham. It was Elohim and the Anatot who cast off the Old Testament church and her people, the unconverted Jewish people, so that the children of the Old Testament church should not be heirs with the Isaac, the children of the New Testament church. So the house of David in our day is the children of the New Testament church with 144,000, and we're the church that was the Isaac branch church that developed and became born here in 2002, that had its seed and foundation laid as an allegory with Brother Johnson in 1970 with the house of Esau, because he had the first opportunity and he had the first privilege to bring forth the righteous line, and he was given 33 years to see if he couldn't do this. With the sanctuary completely restored and put into full operation, and still with all of that, he failed to do it. So, the children of the New Testament church, which were the children of Isaac, that were born in 2002, with the house of David, for they have, see, it says, for the children of the flesh have Hagar, have nothing in common. For they have nothing in common. This plainly says that the Jews that failed to accept Yahshua and thereby failed to receive the second birth shall therefore never have a part in the everlasting kingdom of the Yahweh. And if the unconverted Jew cannot inherit the everlasting kingdom of the heaven here on earth, a physical kingdom with the identity as the everlasting kingdom of David, certainly the unconverted apostolic believers, antithetical, and the unconverted Gentile cannot be heirs of the everlasting kingdom of the heavens set up here on this earth, with its headquarters starting in the Liberty Hill, Texas, where they sit up right now. Okay. Either following the Jewish congregation typified by the Ishmael, we have next the congregation which originated with a people from the same nation, but who received the second birth, a birth that is impossible for man to give, just as by nature it was impossible for Isaac to be born under Sarah in her old age. But Elohim alone, through his spirit and his promises, can give the second birth. Okay, he can give a second birth unto the house of David, the inheritor of the righteous branch, Jeremiah 23. Just as it was Elohim alone who could make possible Isaac's birth, that is why Isaac represents the New Testament church of the house of David in the 12th hour. Because the Adventist church from 1844 to 2002 was represented by the Old Testament church of the Pharisees, their forefathers, the scribes and the Sadducees, their forefathers, had their influence and they had their continuance with the Old Testament church clear down to 2002. Willis Johnson closing out that chapter in that era of the Old Testament church in 2002. Sarah then becomes the head of the church of the firstborn, which is written in heaven with the house of David in the 12th hour. Sarah typified the church itself. Sarah and Isaac together represent the New Testament church and her children. Well, since Sarah and Isaac didn't have a chance to start operating until the death, and Yahweh casting away Hagar and Ishmael in 2002 with the Vertus W. Johnson as the head of that house of Ishmael and Esau. We have now discussed three periods. Number one, the period represented by Eve. Number two, the period represented by Hagar. And the period represented by Sarah. Okay, thus we have covered one part of the typology. Just as there were three sections or divisions of the church, so also there are three sections of the true priesthood. Okay, now the true priesthood is Yahshua in the New Testament. And so there's got to be three sections in the New Testament like there was in the Old Testament. You know that the priesthood in the time of the Jewish church was a Levitical priesthood, and it was not in existence before Israel left Egypt, and it was not the true priesthood today. Before the Levitical priesthood, there was Melchizedek. He had neither father nor mother, neither beginning of days nor end of days, and it was a priest of the Most High Elohim, king of Salem, king of peace, and he was. Unto him Abraham paid his tithe. Then the three sections of the priesthood, lines up thus, number one, in the period from Adam unto the Eve until the time of Israel. We have Melchizedek, and number two, until the Christian era, we have the Levitical priesthood. And number three, in the Christian period, we have the priesthood of Yahshua himself. So much for the priesthood. We are ready now to study the typology of the children of the church. Unto Eve was born first Cain and Abel. Cain was wicked and Abel was righteous. In the typology of Abraham, two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael, who taunted Isaac, was put aside, and Isaac was chosen. Then came Esau and Jacob again, one being evil and the other good. Thus we see that through the types there were two classes of children in the history of the congregation, the good and the bad. In the case of Cain and Abel, Cain, who should have led out in the true worship since he was the eldest son, chose instead not to worship Elohim according unto his command, whereas Abel was a true worshiper of Elohim, because Yahweh accepted Abel's offering and rejected Cain, he persecuted and slew Abel. This incident served for the demonstration of the actions of the church leaders who were determined for the leading of the Elohim people wrong, and even resorted unto murdering those who refused to be led wrong. That was paid out, carried down to the end of time, to the third feeding pasture of Gilead. These two spirits were antagonistic against each other during that time. Okay. Next in the line came Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael was the older. Isaac was the younger. But Ishmael and Hagar were sent away because he persecuted Isaac and Hagar persecuted Sarah. Okay, now in this case, Sarah is represented by the truth woman now that's the head of the house of David. Okay, and you have a literal husband and wife team that heads up the house of David, just like you had a husband and wife team that headed up Gilead Center from 1970 to 2003 when we were with them. You had a husband and wife team that headed up the Rodens after V.T. Hollis died. You had a husband and wife team that headed up the Rod Movement from 1930 to 55, and that was V.T. Hollis and his wife Florence. So you've had a man and a woman representing the leadership of Yahweh's true church. Okay, and when the Adventists began, you had a man and a woman representing the leadership of that church. That was notably James White and his wife, Ellen G. White. Okay. Now notice that when Israel went into a 40-year fast, she was not designated by prophecy to have a man and a woman, a husband and a wife team, to head up that 40 years from 1890 to 1930. You notice that. Because Israel was in a 40-year fast, for there was no new truth being brought forth by a prophet. So there was no need to have a prophet and a man and a woman team to head up that movement. Besides, Ellen G. White was living in 1890 when that 40-year period began for the spiritual fast of Judah, according to Ezekiel's prophecy of Ezekiel 4, Sister White lived 25 years into that time period. But she was a single woman. And she'd already done told the Seventh-day Adventist Church she wouldn't give them another new ray of light, because Yahweh had commanded that they receive nothing new until they make use of the old, and it was too late for them to make use of the old. And so she just wrote reproof and admonition back to the General Conference and the officers, leadership, and the president, that wrote reproof and admonition to them for them having been slothful and rejecting the truth of Jones and Radner in 1888-1890. Let us go on. For this friction and trouble in the Abraham's home foreshadowed the trouble that came later between the converted Jew and the unconverted Jew in the apostolic congregation at the beginning of the apostolic dispensation with the apostles, for the Elohim casting away Hagar, who persecuted Isaac, and Ishmael, who persecuted Sarah, and Ishmael, who persecuted Isaac, typified his casting away the Jewish nation and his people that would not become converted to the antiquated apostolic believers of the antiquated church of the Nazarene, descendants of the apostles. Yahshua was a Nazarene. He raised up the former apostles. He raised up the first brass mountain that was mentioned there in Zechariah 6. And there was only one brass mountain at that time, but then over a 2,000 years period of time, it became divided into two brass mountains. One of them representing the apostolic brass mountain of the purified church at its beginning, and the latter representing the antitypical apostolic brass mountain of purified church in the end, which is represented by the house of David. Now it says a little stone in Daniel 2:44-45 is hewn out of the mountain without hands and grows into a mountain and fills the whole earth. So that mountain it grows into is this second brass mountain of Zechariah 6 that fills the whole earth. It's the part of that first brass mountain that the apostles, it was only divided in cut into two mountains. And the latter part of the mountain was removed to the end of time. The first part of the mountain stayed at the beginning of the 2,000-year period that's allotted for the New Testament era. In the experience of the Esau and Jacob, we find still another allegory which carries the line of the church history still further, as we shall see a little later. Of these twins, Esau was the older and Jacob was the younger. It was therefore Esau's privilege to be the spiritual leader of the family, and through the Esau, the 12 tribes of Israel were to come. Besides this blessing, Yahshua himself was to come through the Esau's line of the posterity. But because he was evil and held in low esteem his birthright privileges, he lost them unto his brother Jacob, who coveted the spiritual blessing. And I'll be truthful with you, I didn't know I was playing the antitypical role of Jacob when I joined Rodas in 1970, but I do know one thing. My initial contact with the truth was that this is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and I will never let it go. That's what I said from day one. I always coveted that blessing that was promised unto the purified house of Israel. After the momentous transaction was consummated in which Jacob purchased Esau's birthright for a bowl of pottage, then Esau reflected upon the deal and deeply regretted, since there was no way for him to recover his loss as long as Jacob was living. Okay, he at once sought to persecute and kill Jacob, just like as King Saul told his son Jonathan. He said, as long as that man David is alive, you will never be king of Israel. Jonathan made good friends with Jacob, and he said, I know Jonathan made good friends with David. He told David, he said, I know that you will be the next king of Israel, but I will be king after you. No, Jonathan was wrong. Jonathan was dead before David became king of Israel. Okay, this is the circumstance that drove Jacob from his home to another country. Now, if the experience of Jacob and Esau does constitute an allegory, in which it did, and it came to fruition in 1970 at Kermit, Texas, with Willis Johnson filling fulfilling that role of the antiquated Esau being born at that time, and Elijah, David, representing the allegory of Jacob being born at that time. Where in the church history does it appear? See, Levitas asked me a question. Yeah, he didn't know. Because it came after his death, and so how could he know? Since Ishmael was a type of the Jewish church, and Isaac was a type of the Christian church, then we must look sometime in the Christian dispensation for an experience similar to Jacob's and Esau's, for they were Isaac's sons. Therefore, sometimes during the Christian period, two classes of people were to be born unto the Christian church, the evil and one good. So now here, V.T. Hollis is identifying the shepherd rod as the Christian church that was going to produce this here allegory of Isaac and Esau and Jacob being born in the future from his day. Okay, so it says, since Ishmael was a type of the Jewish church, and so when V.T. Hollis died, and typical Ishmael succeeded him. That's how close Ishmael was in the household of the shepherd's rod, with V.T. Hollis. So in that allegory, then V.T. Hollis had to play the role of antitypical Abraham in that allegory in 1955. Okay, so now, Ishmael was born in our day with V.T. Hollis, with Ben Roden taking over in 1955 with the rod, was a type of the Jewish church. Okay, so the antitypical Ishmael then was a type of the antitypical Jewish church of the flesh. And Isaac was a type of the antitypical apostolic Nazarene believers, the second brass mountain, the purified congregation. Then we must look sometime in the Christian dispensation for an experience similar unto Jacob and Esau. So, the Christian dispensation started then in 1844 with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And so, here in the Christian dispensation, then the rod period, and so whenever 1970 struck and began at the 11th hour, the close now the 10th hour, then you had the Jacob and Esau was born in the allegory. Okay? For they were Isaac's sons. Okay. Therefore, sometimes during the Christian period, two classes of people were to be born. Okay, so that was 1970 that this made its fulfillment. To the Christian church, one evil and one good. There you have it right there. Willis Johnson was the evil one, and Jacob as antitypical, Denton Brunken as antitypical Jacob was the good one. Now it says, before going further in the study of Esau and Jacob's typology, we need to spend a few moments on this part of our chart, which shows the line of children, people born under the line of the woman representing the church's history in its three divisions. To make up the church, there must be the mother, the agency which embodies the truth, and the children, the people brought into the church, and the priesthood. These three constitute the living church on earth. For the line of the children of Yahweh and the living church is Seth, who was appointed to fill Abel's place. After Seth was Isaac, whom Elohim chose in preference to Ishmael. Okay. After Isaac came Jacob, who obtained from Esau the birthright, which brought great spiritual blessing. Do you not see that one child from each of the three periods was used to typify the continuance of the children of Yahweh in the church? So, the last one was Jacob. And he was chosen in 2002 in the Antidote to continue the children of Yahweh in the church. And that church was born at Gilead Center in 1970. So in order to continue on the children of Yahweh in the church of the Mount Zion, which started at Mount Zion at the 11th hour in Kermit, Texas in 1970, continued on in the Mount Zion at the 12th hour. When he had a change of the guard, he had a transition from the judgment of the dead, closing out the 11th hour, into the judgment of the living, opening up the 12th hour, and with the children continuing on to purification, because they're purified in the 12th hour in the house of David. They're not purified in the antitypical house of King Saul or Esau's house that was ahead of Mount Edom. All these allegories played out in the one place in one time. So the living in the congregation, represented also by the woman of Revelation 12, was in the existence from Eden and will continue until the time that the holy city receives the saints. These three good children, Seth, Isaac, and Jacob, were her seed, her children through time, and it was through this line of the descendants that the kingdom temporal, the kingdom of Israel, was made up. It took all three to make up the people who constituted the kingdom, but not any one of these types did. So in our type, we had the Ishmaelites, we had the Esauites, and we had the Jacobites. And we had the pure woman that gave birth to all of these at one time or another, in one way or another. Okay, now, I say the pure woman gave birth to all of them. No, the pure woman didn't. The pure woman gave birth to the Jacobites in our day. So anyway, it says, but according to the Revelation 12, the church was at some time to leave the vineyard, their kingdom, and go into the Gentile world. This phase of the church's history is not typified either in Seth or Isaac's experience. Only in Jacob's life do we find the type for it. So the antitypical Jacob's life began in 1970, and so this is where this here allegory then is played out from 1970 on. Just as it was Esau's persecution of the Jacob, it caused Jacob to leave Palestine. Okay. So when did antitypical Jacob then leave Palestine in the Antitype? 2002. Okay. So also it was a persecution by the unconverted Jews against the Christian. So Brother Johnson, unconverted Jews against the house of David, the sires and cries against the abominations in his church, which caused them to leave Palestine and go into the Gentile nation. So we forever left the house of Israel when we were separated in 2002. And where did we end up going? We just got enmeshed into the Gentile world, and we're out here right now hiding in the outback, waiting to be disclosed to you, restoring the temple of David, raising it up. We're putting all the building pieces together out here in the quiet of the forest, and one day we'll bring it forward, and we'll set that temple up for all the world to see. And so it was the line of Seth and Isaac and Jacob that made possible the kingdom of Israel and the Palestine. But if the trouble that came between the Christian Jew and the unconverted Jew was a crucial cause of the woman leaving the kingdom and going into the Gentile world, so in the end of time, the woman left the kingdom of the sinful kingdom that Amos 9 talked about there at Gilead Center from 1970 to 2003. The woman left that kingdom, and she came with her wave sheaf offering, the house of David. She came into the Gentile world and has hid them away for a season. Was it the Isaacites and Ishmaelites or the Sethites? or was it some other? It was the Jacobites, the one that is to bring forth the 144,000 that brought forth the 12 sons for a type in the beginning. In the Jacobite period, okay, the Jacobite period began in 2002 with the house of David, who came into the Gentile world, and that's where we're at right now. Therefore, we now see that the church is in the Jacobite period. We also are able to see from the further development of the Jacob's type that it was from this Gentile world, the living church is to return to Palestine. So we're in the wilderness of people right now, gathering 144,000 in the Jacobite period. So we get them gathered, and we gather in all the converts of the remnant from all over the world into this year, and they pass on the rod and the bond of the covenant. Then antitypical Jacob, which would be antitypical Elijah David, the visible leader, and with Yahshua as the invisible leader. At this time, though, Yahshua will appear as a visible leader, and he will be seen with 144,000, and that's what the world will see. They will see him and 144,000 because the house of David has glorified him and exalted his name above all. And by the time he does this, Yahshua appears in the person. And then he will take us all back to the land of Israel. Okay? Just as the Bible prophesied that it will. We shall now devote a few moments to the study of Jacob the type and the relation unto the church and the antitype. When Jacob left his home in Palestine, while he was on his way to Padan-Aram, Elohim met him and gave him his promises that he would be with him, and Elohim fulfilled his promises. Likewise, when the church left the vineyard, Elohim's promise was with her that he would not forsake her in the Gentile world. While Jacob was in the Padan-Aram away from home, he became very rich in his household and increased greatly. Then he was commanded to return home, so it will be today in antitype. The time will come when the church is to be multiplied and then return home. But when Jacob left his father-in-law's house and was on his way back to Palestine, you remember, that he had his great time of the trouble. It happened before that he reached Palestine, his homeland. He wrestled in anguish all night with the Elohim, and it was then that his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. We are not now living in the antitypical time of the changed name Israel, but we are living in the antitypical Jacob's time, or Vitihalda was wrong. He was approaching the antitypical Jacob's time. But Jacob's time began in 1970, actually. You might say that Jacob is the fleshly name, a name that does not spell either prince or saint. Why are we still in the time portrayed by Jacob's sin-denoting name? Because we have not yet started for home. When we start for the home, as did Jacob, we too shall meet with our time of trouble, even Jacob's time of trouble, and at that time, we will become thoroughly converted unto Elohim forever, and our name will be changed as is foretold in Isaiah 61:6, and it will be the name that Elohim himself will give us. When we demonstrate that we are truly converted, then this great promised blessing will come to us. And when our name has been changed, it signifies that we are certain candidates for the entrance in the everlasting kingdom of the heaven eternal and the land of Israel before going into the faraway heavens to spend 1,000 years. Now, I want to give a little testimony here that I was born in the Adventist Church in the House of Israel in 1938, and then I joined the Mount Zion at the 11th hour in Kermit, Texas in 1970. And then at the end of 1970, I thought I'd always progress in the house of Israel. And I believe that I was in the spiritual land of Palestine, being in the house of Israel. But when Brother Johnson separated me from the body of Gilead Center, I felt like that I had finally been driven out of the house of Israel, first time in my life. that I was driven out of the house of Israel. And sure enough, according to the study here this morning, I was driven out of the house of Israel. As Jacob was driven out of his father's house by his brother Esau, and he had to flee out of his father's house, he had to flee out of Palestine, he had to go into another land. I felt like that my father's house was at Kermit, Texas, for 33 years. I felt like that I was in the promised land, the place where he chose to put his name, and indeed it was. So that was the place at the time. It was in the wilderness of the people, but it was the place at the time. And when I was separated from that body, and I was told to move away from there and to take charge of Yahweh's congregation, well, I felt like that I was continuing on the house of Yahweh. But I felt like that I was first time being cast out of the house of Yahweh and thrust out into the Gentile world. This brings the close of our service. You can contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. We're going to close the service now with a song entitled In the Garden. I come to the garden of love while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my hair, the Son of Yah discloses. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. He speaks and the sound of his voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing, and the melody that he gave to me within my heart is ringing. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share, sweet heavy there, none other has ever known. I'd stay in the garden with him, though the night around me be falling, but he bids me go to the voice of woe. His voice in me is calling, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and it's your joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever.